Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Bob.
All right, you ready? I got I texted a well-placed source earlier today and asked, what's the expectation for when Patrick Mahomes is going to be ready, right? And so this well-placed NFL source responded back to me. First of all, said, good question. So I want to thank that person for saying that good question. Here is what they're feeling that the progress and the plan is going to be for Patrick Mahomes from a well-placed NFL source. They're looking at 9 months. If this happened to any other player, they would probably say the first 6 weeks of the season they would be on IR and then activated. However, it's Patrick Mahomes. We'd be shocked if he wasn't ready for week one. The prognosis is, and not the prognosis, but the thought is that the Chiefs are going to be the ones holding Patrick Mahomes back during his rehab. And I mean, that's kind of something that we all, you know, just figured out. But I will say right now, after the surgery took place yesterday, the reports that I'm getting right now from well-placed league sources, they'd say first 6 weeks of the season would probably be on IR. But it's Patrick Mahomes, and they would be shocked if he is not ready for week one. Now, that's all great and all well, and I love that message that's being put out there in that situation. But I will also say that that should not change from what you're going to do at the backup quarterback position. You have to, you know, make sure that you are solid and ready to go at that backup quarterback position, because both can be true. You could be expecting Patrick Mahomes back for week one, like the folks in the NFL are expecting him to be back for week one. But there is a chance that he's not back and ready to go for week one. So you have to have your plan in place. And look, the Chiefs have done an unbelievable job with, you know, Veach and Andy and all the guys over there of preparing and getting things taken care of and having that plan in place. I think they will. The good news is they do think he'll be ready to go for week one. Anybody else first 6 weeks of the season, probably on IR. All of that being said, you still need to have that backup plan. Both can be true, as we like to say, you know?
So they said it'd be a shock if he wasn't ready, but the Chiefs want to take precaution and let him work it out and get ready?
No, not at all.
That's what I thought you were saying.
No,
like,
not.
They want him to play week one?
Yes.
And it says 9 months?
Well, 9 months is week one, basically, you know.
So we're not counting the month of September as a full month?
No, they're expecting, if it happened to any other player, they'd say the first 6 weeks IR and then activated. However, knowing Mahomes the way that everybody does, they'll be shocked if he wasn't ready for week one.
Interesting. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I guess I was wrong. I don't know.
No, you're not. Because if it was anybody else, they would have put him on IR for the first 6 weeks of the season.
Yes, but with Patrick Mahomes, can't you see a world in which at mini camps we get a video of him and
he's mini camp?
Like,
I think we get it next week.
Oh, no, no, no. But I mean, like a video where he says, "I could play right now."
Yes, right?
And then at training camp, he shows up and they're like, "Yeah, it looks great." And you're like, what? This happened 7 months ago. Like, that's just kind of how Patrick Mahomes operates. Now, I don't want them to – if he's going to be 90% of himself in week one, I'd rather them, you know, do the IR thing, make sure he's fully good to go. But, yeah, knowing who he is and how he's bounced back from his injuries in the past, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's out there for week one.
Yeah, I mean, that's just who he is. I mean, it's bizarre. Right? But, again, anybody else, Dusty's right. First 5-6 weeks of the season, you're on IR. I mean, we'll get you back after the bye or something like that. But – I mean, this guy is—it's remarkable, and so you have to just trust. I mean, he's come back from everything too. That's the other thing. It's like Patrick Mahomes has had this remarkable way, guys, of healing.
Yeah. All right, I thought he'd be out at least first 4 weeks of the season, but I guess it's
and like
freakish Mahomes
healing and playing through stuff too. Because for a second there, when he was down, and then he got up to walk off the field before they took him back into the locker room, I'm thinking, oh, I thought he tore his ACL, but maybe it's just like hyperextended it. Like maybe his knee has another injury.
Right.
Like, because how many times have we seen him go down with a gruesome looking injury where his leg bends a certain way or his ankle bends a certain way? Then he's back in the game in the next quarter.
Right.
No doubt. All right, Nathan. Start Bench Shutdown.
Here's Fesco, Dusty, and Mac with this week's edition of Start Bench Cut.
Somebody says he is human. I just got 9 texts in a row. He is human. He's 30. He's missing 4 to 6 weeks. Let's be real. And come down from the clouds. I don't know. Like I said, if it was anybody else, 9 months or whatever, if it's not, it's Patrick Mahomes, maybe he just is different. Maybe he's built different.
I hope it doesn't come across like I'm in the clouds and saying I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, no, that's not being in the clouds. I'm reporting from a very in NFL source what they're saying. I'm giving you guys the information. You can spin it, take it however you want. But no, this is Patrick Mahomes we're talking about. Because I was with Dusty. I'm like, oh, you got to have a backup. He's probably going to be out the first 5 weeks of the season.
Right.
But then you hear, this is Patrick Mahomes, and the Chiefs are probably going to have to hold Patrick back from doing all this rehab. He's going to attack rehab like he attacks everything. And so it's not heads in the cloud. It's looking at the evidence that we've seen when this gentleman gets injured, how he rehabs and gets back and ready to play.
Right.
And it's different than everybody else. So that's okay to have that sense of thought, you know?
I think I still stand pat, no pun intended, on what I thought at the beginning. I think that when it comes down to it, I think the first 4 weeks, you don't win or lose your season in the first 4 weeks of the season.
Right.
You can lose it if you throw him out there too early and he re-aggravates that.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is like it's Patrick Mahomes. I get it. Like, and this is tough. I get it that he's a, you know, what we've said before, he's a competitive prick. But sometimes you have to, like, be like, hey, dude, I understand you want to go out there. Remember that video when they had him on the sideline and Andy's like, go get it checked out.
Yeah.
And he's like, go get it checked out. Then we'll figure things out. I get it. You want to be there. You're the guy. But damn it, Patrick. Like, don't try to ruin your career any further than trying to expedite what, yes, you are a freakish athlete, but don't damage something in a freakish moment.
Just one more thing. You brought this up earlier is the Chiefs are going to get a third place schedule. And I think they have to be going to the league like, hey, Thanksgiving, Black Friday, Christmas, another Christmas game, international
games. All that
needs
to be off.
Hey, how about we get our third place schedule, which we'll get the NFC South as our one-off NFC team. How about we get the Falcons and the Bengals in like week 2 and 3 and then a bye in like week 5? You know, like how about you help us out? We've helped you out. So I think there's going to be, you know, maybe not a need to rush him back either once we see that schedule.
Not a need to rush him back. Start, bench, cut. We talked about it a little bit. We didn't know how far we get into it, but start, bench, cut, positions of need. Edge rusher, tall receiver, running back.
I'm going to start edge rusher. I'll bench tall receiver, and then I'll cut running back.
Based on where this team is right now, I'm going to start edge rusher, bench running back, and cut the receiver.
Okay, that's good.
We go to best team in your mind to win it all. Start, bench, cut. Rams, Bills, Broncos.
I'm going to go in that order. I think that is the right order for me. It's I'll start the Rams, I'll bench the Bills, and I'll cut the Denver Broncos. Yeah.
I'm going to go in the same order as well, but I wish I could just take the Rams against the field. I think they're clearly the best team in the league, and they still are losing to teams like Carolina, but I think they're clearly the best team in the
NFL. No concern with the Devontae Adams injury. Big red zone target this year for Matt Stafford.
That's fair.
And now you can just bracket Puka Nacua. Good luck with that. Wow, he's kind of an ass.
I just think
Puka is? Yeah, really?
He's kind of an arrogant
after
ass.
The game stuff, the celebration stuff.
He's just he had his live camera on the locker room talking smack to fans. Like, I thought you were this quiet assassin. I think he's kind of a Richard.
Oh, okay.
Going to like events, be like, Ravens suck. It's like, what?
My biggest thing is,
in the NFC.
I know. My biggest thing is like, and it's
that sucks.
Thing.
I'm not gonna lie. Like hearing that sucks.
I know. I'm kind of shocked by that too. It's kind of an AFC thing. Like the no Lamar, no Burrow, no Mahomes part of this.
Yeah.
Like McVay Stafford is just by far and away like eons of distance between the second place other quarterback coach combo.
No doubt. Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Teams in the on deck circle that could do it. Start, bench, cut with hope that they could. Patriots, Seahawks, Niners.
I'm going to go Niners. I'm really in on Kyle Shanahan now. Like him a lot. I'll go with the Hawks. I'll bench them, and I'll cut the Patriots because I don't want another AFC team, you know, stealing our thunder. So bye-bye.
I'm going to start the Patriots. I think all they have to do is get past the Bills. I don't know if that'll be in the divisional or the conference championship. If they do that, I think they're in the Super Bowl. I'm going to bench the 49ers, and I don't trust Sam Darnold, so I'm going to cut the Seahawks.
Okay. Most do you want to see out of a guy for the Chiefs the rest of the year? Rashard Smith, Gelati, or Rashee Rice without Patrick Mahomes?
Hmm. I really want to see a lot out of Breshard Smith, so I'm going to start him. I've been excited about him since the draft, and I haven't gotten my excitement fulfilled, I'll tell you that. Then I'll bench Gelati, and then I'll cut Rashee Rice. I kind of think we know what Rashee Rice is. And based on Gelati's performance the other day, I need more of that guy. Holy cow, was he good?
I want to go in the same order as you, Bob, but there's like a different vein in me that wants to go start Rashee Rice from like an effort perspective. Like, we've heard what Nate Taylor had to say. The team's out of it. You're going to have Gardner Minshew, a backup offensive line. What are you getting up for these games still? Or are you phoning it in? Mm-hmm. I kind of am interested to see that, but I think overall, probably going to start Breshard Smith, bench Gelati, cut Rice.
Moving forward into the playoff picture, pressure-wise, start, bench, cut, Stafford, Josh Allen, Drake May.
Well, I'm starting Josh Allen. I don't think anybody in postseason sports in the last 25 years has had more pressure on him than Josh Allen does this year.
More than Aaron Judge.
Yeah, I do Should think be. So. Yeah, because Should it's be. The NFL versus Major. But that's a tough one, Dusty, and it's a really good thinking question. And it's the Yankees, it's that. But I'm leaning towards the NFL. I am, just because everybody's out of your way right now. Like, Judge still had to go through the Dodgers and stuff like that. Like, everybody's out of your way for Josh Allen right That's now. So I'm going to start Josh Allen. I will bench Matthew Stafford. And I don't think Drake May has any pressure. He's like Patrick Mahomes in that 2018 season.
Same order for me. I think Stafford does have a little bit of pressure in the sense of his legacy can really be elevated with another ring. But it's not like he must get it done.
Right.
Josh Allen, unfortunately, I mean, the things that hold quarterbacks back like Philip Rivers from being in this conversation are Super Bowl rings. We do that with quarterbacks in the NFL more than any other sport. And like you said, Bob, the guys are out of his way. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. The ball can bounce all sorts of different ways. If he doesn't win it this year, you can't tell me he's a top five, top 10 quarterback of all time. I mean, this is Bo Nix, CJ Stroud, and Drake May on the way to the Super Bowl? Ooh. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Trevor Lawrence, Aaron Rodgers.
Maybe Trevor Lawrence?
Trevor Lawrence, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, my God, Dusty, you're right.
Jeez. Going fishing in the AL East is what the links to the Royals have had this offseason. Keep, throw back, eat, or start, pinch, cut. Jazz Chisholm, a name that has now linked to the Royals at second base. Jaren Duran or Cody Bellinger?
Cody Bellinger, I'm starting. Duran, I'm benching. And Jazz, I'm cutting. Can we get more into Jazz on the other side?
Sure, yeah.
That's interesting.
And then Nathan?
Same order, but I think Duran might be a little more realistic. But if Bellinger's on the table, I'm starting him 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then the last one here is the holiday is coming up. We'll be off all next week for the Christmas holiday. What's a better vibe, start, bench, cut? Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Christmas evening?
I love Christmas Eve like I love Thanksgiving. Yeah, Christmas Eve's the best. It's always been, we've always had family parties, and then we have our Kiter friend party that we go to every year that I love, and every year Christmas comes around, and it's, it just reminds me of being a kid again at their house, so I love Christmas Eve. I'm going to bench Christmas evening this year because we'll all be at Arrowhead, and then I'll cut Christmas Day.
Yeah, I'm starting Christmas Eve too. It's always been the best day of the year. It's when the family does our stuff. Christmas morning, I think I'll bench that one. I think whether you're coming downstairs or opening presents as a kid or whether you're on the way to a function, I think there's anticipation in Christmas morning. But Christmas evening doesn't do anything for me. I'm usually just watching a movie and taking a nap.
Yeah, you're done getting ready. Like, a lot of people have to work on the 26th, you know? It's getting ready for work. Yeah.
Coming up, we'll get into some Royals conversation on the other side of 96.5 The Fan. You're home for Kansas City Sports. Back at it here on 96.5 The Fan. We were just kind of scrolling through social media in one of the breaks, and I noticed that on one of the Royals fan bases, it says Royals might be linked to a name in the words of Jazz Chisholm to fill the second base void. Again, I don't think it is truth. I don't think there's a lot to it.
Can I ask you a question real fast? Do we have a void at second base?
I mean, Michael Massey's your second baseman, right? And then you have a backup plan if you want in Jonathan India, if he's not used in a deal to go get somebody else that's a free, that's a, you know, on a roster right now, like in maybe Boston. But I think Massey will be your opening day second baseman.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you keep Jonathan India, he will be that sort of really, really poor man's Ben Zobrist, right?
Yeah.
He'll play left field if he has to, or play second base, or if he has to spell Michael Garcia at third, he plays third. But there's a few things you do know. Center field is Kyle Isbell.
Mm-hmm.
Left field is the kid they got from Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Lane Thomas is here as well. He's another guy that could be there. Your first baseman is Vinny. Your DH is Sal or Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Your right fielder as of now is Jack Caglione. And your third base and shortstop are, as advertised, in Bobby Witt Jr., Michael Garcia. So
give me a better left side of the infield, man. That just is spectacular. We got Gold Glovers. We got guys signed up to long-term deals, man. Like, it's awesome. I love that. And what do you think about Jazz? Because you, of the three of us, were probably the most, you know, anti-Jazz, you know, during the postseason. What do you think, Dusty, about them potentially being linked to Jazz Chisholm here in Kansas City?
I don't know what his skill set can be. I don't watch every Yankees game, but I know that he was a good piece to that roster. I know that he is absolutely hated in Kansas City for reasons like, first off, you'd have to have a conversation with Michael Garcia because I don't think they like each other very often. I am a no on this for me because I think that this team is so built together inside the locker room. I've been in there multiple times. We've had player conversations all the time as well during the season. We'll talk to Vern tomorrow at 8:20 to talk things about the Royals and their winter meetings and what's coming up for the hot stove season.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you look at what he brings, he's a perfect Yankee. He's a perfect, like, blue blood type player because you don't want him on your team if you're trying to build a rapport. You want him on a team that already has it, if that makes sense.
No, I totally agree.
And he's definitely a guy that you hate if he's not on your team. You love him if he's on your team.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's on, like, the Phillies, the Braves, because, like, no one really cared about Jazz Chisholm when he was with the Marlins.
Right.
No one's going to care about Jazz Chisholm if he's on the Royals.
I remember years ago,
a Dodger or somebody like that.
We went to the Marlins for our baseball trip a few years ago, and Jazz Chisholm was playing. And I was texting some people who were, I believe, with the Royals at the time. And I said, this is a perfect addition for Kansas City. Go get Jazz Chisholm. He'd be a great player for us here in Kansas City. And then years later, you know, here we are sitting. But I think, Nathan, what do you think about it? I just, for whatever reason, feel like it would be kind of difficult to go from hating a guy to loving a guy as a fan. And that's just me being 8-year-old Bobby. You know, that's just how I am. And I've never gotten past being 8-year-old Bobby before, you know?
Well, put some respect on Miami Marlins Jazz Chisholm. First of all, this guy was the cover athlete of MLB The Show, guys.
Yep, correct.
Yeah. No, the flair that he played with, I loved it with it when it was in Miami. Obviously, it rubs you the wrong way more when you're in New York, like you guys said. But I think about, like, what actually happened between Garcia and Jazz Chisholm. He's upset about, like, hard tags, mm-hmm. like not even like anything mm-hmm. dirty or anything like words or like. And Garcia hasn't even engaged. Like
right.
when Volpe was waving at him, Garcia just like walked off the field. Like it's a one sided beef.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't like each other, Michael Garcia doesn't show it when he's out there. It's Jazz Chisholm that does this. So it's so weak. It's so mentally weak. And I think along the same vein of Dusty, who said he might break up that clubhouse, I think at a minimum, they all pull on the same end of that rope. And I think when things get hard, I'm worried about if Jazz Chisholm's going to do that.
Here's the thing, Dusty. When you mentioned, you know, bringing him into an established team versus a team like the Royals, I think you definitely hit the nail on the head. You have to understand and really dive into a person's personality when you're bringing them into an organization like the Royals or any smaller market,
right.
smaller revenue type of team. Because if you bring the wrong guy in and you make a mistake financially, it's tough to overcome that financial mistake. You can overcome a financial mistake if you're the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Mets or, you know, some of these bigger revenue ball clubs. The Royals can't overcome a bad investment on a player because, well, it's, I mean, if they spend $20 million, that they don't have $200 billion floating around the sky like the Dodgers do. So they can't make those mistakes. And I think you're right about pulling on the rope, too. Like when the going gets tough, is Jazz Chisholm going to be one of these guys that runs to the front of the boat and brings everybody with him?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he going to be the guy that takes a left-hand turn and jumps off and says, screw this, I'm out? And when you're in Kansas City, you need everybody rowing on the boat in the same direction. This isn't New York or L.A. And quite frankly, it's not L.A. You need everybody on that team pulling in the same direction. And if you have guys that aren't and are doing their own thing, it ruins a clubhouse and a locker room. And we've seen that over the years here.
Yeah, teams like the Royals get glue guys like Adam Frazier.
Right.
Teams like the Yankees get, I don't know, rubber band guys like Jazz Chisholm because mm-hmm. they don't care what he does, what he says. They just more care, can he help the team win? Whereas that's in reverse order for Kansas City. They need guys that can help win, and then they can go do whatever they want. Like, Vinny Pasquantino's the mouthpiece because he's positive and he's a leader in that locker room. Jazz Chisholm goes out there and, you know, makes an error or something like that. He's like, well, in the fifth inning, if we don't give up a run, it's like, that you can't say that.
I mean, the last guy we had like that was Whit Merrifield, right? And we wanted him run out of town. I mean, Whit was a great baseball player when things were okay around here, but when the times got tough, he melted. He wilted and said, if it was a better team, I'd get my shot and we can go to Canada. I don't need people like that in my organization.
No, right. So we're all unanimous no on the Jazz. It's obvious, right?
I would lean towards
Chisholm is going to start in center field.
I mean, could you imagine in your life if you were driving down 435 and the Royals game started? Here comes Jazz Chisholm. I would lose it, right?
Chaz Chisholm is going
to. Yeah.
And it's so easy to say it that way, too.
For sure it is. Again, I don't think it's obviously happening. It was
an
article.
No, it's a good conversation, though.
It was just one of those things. So, yeah.
I think the biggest takeaway here is not with that mispronunciation of his name. We shouldn't have used the rope pulling metaphor.
Well,
I mean,
it is Tuesday, though. Hey, yeah.
This team thinks that they don't have a second base problem, though, Bob, to your original question. Michael Massey is their answer there still internally. And then if India isn't moved, they can platoon him. I see what they believe. I believe that an upgrade would be ideal.
I don't disagree with an upgrade, but sometimes I talk like I'm thinking about how they're thinking right now, you know? And I like Michael Massey, but the problem is not healthy.
It's availability.
Yeah, it's availability.
Not Michael Massey conversation. We'll get into something we need to get into here in a second, but what is more of a need in your opinion? An edge rusher for the Chiefs or a right field bat for the Royals?
CAG's developing for the Royals is
huge. Trust me, for my credibility, for my career, for my lust, love, I need him to be great. The Royals definitely need him to be good. But yes, I don't know, man. What go, man?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question, dude. The Royals have never developed that power hitting ever.
Who says they have?
Can I answer this in a weird way?
No.
Okay.
Yes. Kind of.
Don't throw anything at me.
I'm not a thrower. That was one guy I used to work with
years ago, right? Yeah. I think the Royals are closer to winning, so I would rather have the power hitting bat than the Chiefs having the edge rusher. Is that fair to say? I mean, is that where we are right now? Because
Just so hyperbolic.
No. Look, the team is under 500 right now. They're out of the playoffs. They're going to be a top 10, 11 draft pick now.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, if you look at it this way, what if Cags is that 30 home run, 90 RBI guy?
It's all the difference in the world.
I'll do the entire show shirtless.
Well, I'm saying this team's winning the division, and that's not hyperbole at all. If the Chiefs had a better pass rush group, I'm still saying, man, the running back position, the right tackle, the wide receiver, what are they going to do at cornerback? Is McDuffie gone? Is Watson gone? I shouldn't have not had this ready.
Watson, yes!
You know, Fulton, what is the cornerback group? There's so the kicking game. What does Mahomes need to look like?
You're not wrong in any of this.
Questions. If Cags is your power hitting right fielder, the Royals are winning the division.
No doubt. And I think the Royals, in my opinion, should be the favorite to win the division this year. I don't know what the Indians are doing. The White Sox aren't ready to win the division. Detroit will probably trade Scooble before the year starts. So the Royals have every opportunity. And if Cags does go, 90 RBIs and 25 home runs, that is the difference that you need. That is the difference in winning the division and making the playoffs versus not.
So either way, in the future, in right field, will be where? Do we know that yet? Are we getting more information on these?
Yeah, it's going to be, it's going to be soon. Yeah, well,
don't throw anything at me.
No. I mean, I talked to a well-placed source on Friday, and they said in all closure soon, Bob. I'm like, okay, good. it was you could tell the person I was talking to is exhausted by it as well.
Sure.
And that's somebody.
So are all the ears listening.
Everybody.
And that's not on you.
No,
that's
just, it's everybody wants closure. Everybody wants an answer for what we're going to have with the stadium stuff. And while everybody's talking about the Royals stuff, you know, it's the Chiefs that I think right now, they've been in, from what I've been told, conversations with the city of Shawnee, you know, about stuff over the last couple of weeks, some deep conversations with the state of Kansas over the last couple of weeks. That being said, they're still talking to the state of Missouri right now. But the date that you need to know is December 22nd. That's when Kansas has their LCC meeting scheduled. And what that meeting is the approval of the Star Bonds for the Star Bond District for the stadiums. Now, the Royals still have some things to work through as they finalize things. They're still obviously talking with the Jewish Community Center, the J. That seems to be kind of the final piece. The T-Mobile stuff is still kind of floating around out there. I don't know, you know, how much they're, you know, in negotiations with the Royals about moving forward there. But it seems like the last piece of that puzzle is the land that the J is on. Now, the land that the J is on is not part of the spring campus. That is a separate parcel of land. So that's why all this is kind of, you know, difficult at times. And where they built the Andretti thing, that's a different parcel of land as well. So you've got all of that factoring in. But the one thing that I find interesting about all of this is that there is a potential land swap discussion being taken between Black and Veatch at 115th Street there and the spring campus, which is just across 115th Street. Like, if the Royals can't get everything finalized that they need with the J and stuff like that, there has been talk of a land swap possibility with Black and Veatch and moving the stadium to where the Black and Veatch headquarters is, which is technically closer to the highway than where the Sprint campus is at this point in time. So I know that the Royals and the J and everybody, they're working diligently to try to find an answer to that big question right now that everybody wants, you know, what's going to happen with them. But there is also the possibility of having the land swap with Black and Veatch, where Black and Veatch would just take over the Sprint campus, move their stuff there, because they're looking to build new, as we told you back in March on that one. And then you would have potentially the Royals going to where the Black and Veatch headquarters is right now. So those are conversations that are happening. On the Missouri side, they're still having conversations. But again, anything done on the Missouri side does still require a vote and a sales tax of the people. I don't know how many people are going to vote for a sales tax. I think if they do a Chiefs only, people do think it will pass to remain over there. But is that the best way? Is that the best situation for the organization too? I think the organization got hit with a big sucker punch on Sunday when Mahomes went down. And I think a lot of people, and this is me talking, I think a lot of people realized the mortality real quick of Patrick Mahomes and like, we got to get this thing moving, you know, if we want to capitalize on the Mahomes era and get the stadium that we so desire here in Kansas City. So that may have had a little bit of a factor in it. But I think with that December 22nd deadline looming, that's where they approve the Star Bond districts, whether it's for the Chiefs and Royals, the Royals, the Chiefs, however they decide to do it. That's a date to keep in mind. We could see.
Six days away.
Yeah, it's next week. Yeah. I had heard, you know, that last week that we could potentially see the Royals jump this week. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know when the Chiefs are looking at an imposed deadline for themselves. But that December 22nd date is big. They may just announce that meeting that they have approved the Star Bond districts. Then teams announce if they're going to choose to utilize those Star Bond districts. But, you know, it we're getting there, guys. And I know I've been saying that for better part of a year. But I think most of the information that you've been getting from me has been pretty dead on. And so I don't know that there's anybody in town that's had better information on the stadium stuff than I've had on the stadium stuff. And so that December 22nd date is a big one. As far as that meeting that took place in Leawood, I was told that 30% of the attendees were Jackson County residents. And the other thing is, Leawood, I hate to break this to you, the stadium's going to be in Overland Park, not your town, so you really don't have much of a say.
So as you catch a breath and take a drink of water, we move from stadium information to Patrick Mahomes information.
Yes, we do. And that is some good information that I did receive from a well-placed NFL source this morning about, Patrick Mahomes and where he said where he's going to go. And I said, what's the expectation that he's ready for opening day? And I got back, good question, which I said thank you to as well. they're looking at 9 months right now.
Do you do that via text as well?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay.
Depending who it is. Yeah.
Thanks.
But they said to me, this well-placed NFL source, they're looking at 9 months. If this happened to any other player, they would probably say the first 6 weeks of the season they would be on IR, but this is Mahomes. They'd be shocked if he wasn't ready for week one.
I think it's okay to be shocked in this situation.
I do too. I don't have a problem with that.
And I'm talking about legacy and longevity. I don't want Patrick Mahomes to go out there and think that, you know, he's got to be rushed and play the position at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I understand that most people will say, hey, with ACLs, like, look at, you know, Micah Parsons next year. You know, you'd be shocked.
It's different, though.
It is, because he's playing a different position.
Yeah.
But quarterback is still, it's the left knee. Now, in your head, when you think about when you throw the football, what's the last thing that gets planted?
Well, I'm a left-hander, so.
Oh, okay. That's
true. Right? I'm trying to do it backwards.
You stop back, and then when you throw, if he's right-handed, you plant with that left leg and then release,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You always hear, don't throw off your back foot. You want to plant. That is the knee that is being surgically repaired.
Yeah.
Or was repaired last night, the ACL and the LCL. I know Patrick Mahomes is, I'm never in my life will I question Patrick Mahomes is tenacity on the field, his willing to be that guy. But sometimes we talked about this. This is funny that we bring this up. We talked about my grandpa at the lake having to do everything. Mm-hmm. Pat, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I know that you want to be out there, but it's going to make it that much sweeter when you finally do get to get out there, because I have, God forbid, you go out there and plant that leg and, you know, from the, you know, boom, and it's not ready. It might be ready in Pat's mind and ready what he thinks. But sometimes the best thing you can do is tell your kids no.
Yeah.
Because you know it's going to benefit them in the long run. Dad, I want this toy right now. Why don't you wait until after Christmas? Well, I want it now. Mm-hmm. Just wait. And then when they get it, it's that much sweeter on Christmas Day when they have it then, instead of just, because you just don't want to ruin it. And right. I don't want him to think in his own mind that he has to come back, that he is the savior of the franchise that he was for the last 10 years. That they're going to make some moves. They're going to change some things up. They're going to bring new voices in. And while we do all that and we get better, you get better. You can't lose your season in September. You can't win your season in September, but you can lose your entire season if your franchise quarterback does re-aggravate that knee.
Yeah, I'm more with you on this than I am with, you know, getting him back out there for the first week of the season, because I would think, okay, but this person did tell me, they go, look, the Chiefs are probably going to have to hold Patrick back from rehabbing.
Good.
And that's a good thing. Like, he's all ready to go. And I mean, obviously he had the surgery last night, so you know that he is ready to rock and roll and take care of this thing and get back. And I don't think anybody doubts that he's going to be back, you know, and doing his thing and rehab the right way. But there's no reason you can't still have a plan in place just in case, right? You make sure you have that right backup quarterback and whatnot. And I know everybody wants him back because he is the franchise, but you're right. You just at times, sometimes it's okay to play it a little slow and a little bit longer. And, you know, there's no need to rush him back. But again, he is who he is, and he's healed better than anybody we've ever seen.
So that injury that he sustained in the divisional round against the Jaguars, the ankle sprain, if that happens in week three, he probably goes on IR designated to return. Because, I mean, the next week he was against the Bengals, he was in the pocket. Now he was cooking them with Marcus Kemp. So, you know, Mahomes in the pocket is still a
what
fantastic
a pull,
quarterback.
Marcus Kemp. I forgot about that guy.
Thank you, Bob.
Sean's son.
But then,
right, one of them.
Yes, two weeks later, so 3 weeks after the original injury, he's still, you know, he got hit in the Super Bowl, and it looks like he was going to need to be carried off the field there at the end of the first half, and then breaks off that long run, and we were just like, what's going on? But I don't want that mindset, the get him back, the 60% of Mahomes is better than the rest of the field in week two of the season. I'd rather him get to 100% and not be a guy that can't scramble, that can't trust his plant leg, and those sorts of things. So I'm with you on the get a solid backup plan. Don't rush him back. Try to hold him back. But like the source, I kind of agree with in the sense of like, based on how he recovers from injuries, like that's 8.5 months away.
Yeah.
Like, he could recover from an ACL in 8.5 months, seeing what he's done with these previous injuries, right?
But now being older, does it take longer too? Because as you know, I know it's only a couple of years, but hey, that makes a difference. And it changes the way that you heal in your body as you get older. Everything changes. And so, you know, I'm not going to ever doubt Patrick Mahomes. If they believe that he can be back for week one, I'll be stunned and I'll be surprised and I'll be excited about it. But I'm like, wow, that's remarkable. But, you know, I shouldn't be surprised and stunned about it, because it's Patrick Mahomes, who literally has come back from every injury in no time at all that we've ever seen this guy have in his career.
No doubt. Coming up next, we'll wrap this show up and get you ready for a Wednesday here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You guys like weird, fun betting trends? How about this? Steelers under 7.5 first quarter points is now hitting 64 straight games.
How many?
64 what? Straight games for Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers, 7 points or less in the first quarter. Last night, you watched it. There were no points in the first quarter. So according to Bleacher Report betting, Steelers under 7.5 first quarter points.
It's almost four straight years.
If there's one thing we know about Mike Tomlin, he's consistent.
How have they not scored like a returned a kick or a defensive touchdown and then added a
maybe
field
they,
goal to that?
Maybe they have. They didn't get anything.
Like nothing else on offense then, though. You know what I mean?
Have like you seen this offense the last four years of Pittsburgh?
That's so many games.
Steelers.
It's almost 4 years.
Steelers under 7.5 first quarter points has hit now in 64 straight games. Crying emoji, but like the really, really crying emoji. This comes from Sharp Football. Make it 64 straight games. Tomlin with 7 points or less in the first quarter. 0 first quarter points last night. They had 2 possessions, 2 punts. How about their version of the tush push? Just Darnell Washington back there, and then Aaron Rodgers just keeping his hands warm. I saw a sign the other day, and it was like Santa watching the reindeer fly the sleigh.
But you know what? Why not do that if you're the Chiefs, you know, with all the opportunities that they've had to not be able to get that quarterback sneak? I think I saw that last time. Like, damn, that's something Andy should write down and put, you know.
Oh, we yelled about Blake Bell doing that for years.
Yeah.
And Noah Gray, it's be something he could be useful in.
Or
right?
Maybe it's
something.
One of your running backs or somebody that you could potentially do that. You got to find the right guy, you know, and figure out who that is and go ahead and do it. But
I will say this, Dusty, that the first time I take the under on those points, that'll be the game that it hits.
Well,
so
I'm thinking,
just let me know when you want to bet the over and I'll
who's
I'll
Pittsburgh got this week?
Yeah, we'll this is the week that Pittsburgh breaks that streak because everybody's talking about it. Now you're absolutely right, Nathan, because I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, as soon as I bet this thing, I'm going to lose.
Yeah, I'm not falling for that anymore. It's a really cool fact. I'm not falling for that anymore, though, Dusty.
Yeah.
Would it be ironic if they run a toss power trap and they score for the first time in 65 first quarters?
The Steelers also, they haven't done it recently, but like they were the leaders of that go for two. Like craze, like probably 10 years ago or so.
Well, then they realized they never, that was stupid.
Agreed, but like they never scored a 2-point conversion in that time. Like it's mind boggling that since the pandemic, they haven't scored more than 7 points in a quarter.
Maybe they've got a touchdown. There's no more than 7 this week. They play at Detroit. 325.
Well, that screams like that record's going to stop. I just feel like it, that we're talking about it, you know,
speaking into existence.
Yeah.
Detroit has been playing in a lot of shootouts, the Cowboys game, the Rams game. Both teams are going over 30. Maybe this is the week, Bob.
By the way, Saturday football is back this week. Did you know that for football in the NFL?
Yeah, the college football playoff.
The NFL is back. Yeah.
Philadelphia and the Commandos, they play at 4 p.m. and the Packers and Bears. That's right. They play again. And they play at 7:20 on Saturday evening.
Yep.
Dynamite game on Thursday night. Rams at Seahawks.
Which I think at the beginning of the year, they probably didn't look at that as a very big game, right? I mean, that's just the way that I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Because why would you schedule such an important game on a short week? And the NFL tells me they just weren't expecting Seattle or maybe the Rams at the time with Matthew Stafford, those two teams to be battling potentially for what's going on out there. Because I think ultimately the league would probably look at that and go, well, we screwed that one up. These guys should really have that full week to get ready for such a big divisional game. Where is it? In Seattle?
In Seattle.
And that's a huge advantage, too, for the Seahawks to have that home game, to have that crowd, to have L.A. travel. I know it's not going across the country and it's a short trip and all, but still it's one extra day that you have to do something that Seattle doesn't. So for a divisional game that has everything essentially on the line, I mean, from a consumer standpoint, it's cool that it's Thursday night, but also from a consumer standpoint, I'd rather have guys rest a few more days and get their best effort on Sunday.
Maybe you guys called this out yesterday, but I guess putting that all together, like a battle for the division on Thursday night, college football playoff game Friday night, 3 playoff games on Saturday, plus the Packers and Bears winner will have a chokehold on that NFC North after that one on Saturday night. What a great couple of days. Then we get to see Philip Rivers on Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, when you think about it, like Thursday to Monday, man, there's a lot going on. Yeah.
Yeah. What'd they say last Saturday? That's like 22 consecutive days in a row of just football.
Really?
Because there's a game tonight. I think it's like Jackson State.
In 3, 2, 1, check your phone.
Yeah.
Because Binkley's telling everybody who's playing tonight.
No, I'm pretty sure it's like Jackson. It's like an 8 o'clock start, too, for bowl games. Troy versus Jackson State.
tomorrow's Old Dominion versus South Florida, as well as Louisiana, Delaware.
Yeah.
The Louisiana Purchase. And then there's Thursday, December 18th. We got to watch that one. That's Missouri State versus Arkansas State and the Xbox Bowl.
I'll tune back into college football on Friday night for Alabama and OU.
Yeah, yeah. Tonight is the Salute to Veterans Bowl. Tomorrow is the Cure Bowl. So,
never heard of him.
You never heard of the Cure?
Robert is that Smith? Who the bowl's after? That's
it
cool.
It should be. Yeah. It should just all be like emo players. Like everybody's eye black is like all over their face, all their hair's down. And the quarterback
is the Cure Bowl.
Okay. Oh.
The way they have to do like the cadence. Wide right, XYU. And then Thursday, and then Friday, Kennesaw State versus Western Michigan in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. That's one I'd want to play in. And then, yeah, Saturday's your Alabama, Oklahoma, Miami, Texas A&M. And then...
which is the Friday night game? Oklahoma, Alabama?
I thought it was that one.
Yeah, or is it the... That's Friday night. Yeah, Friday night's Alabama, Oklahoma. Saturday is Miami.
Tulane and James Madison have their games on Saturday.
Saturday is Miami and Texas A&M, Tulane, Ole Miss, James Madison, Oregon.
That's the late game.
Yeah, that's 6:30. Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, that'll be a fun weekend of college football and pro football all on Saturday. I mean, like, what are you doing Saturday? Yeah. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, there's a lot going on from that. We're also 100 days away from opening day today, but actually it's 101 for the Royals because they moved the game back on opening day. Did you see that yesterday?
Is it because they didn't have everything ready? Is it because they have projected Farmer's Almanac?
I don't know what it was. Like, the Royals are supposed to open on the Thursday, and then the Friday's the off day, and then Saturday, Sunday. They're opening in Atlanta, for those who don't know, this year. And they were supposed to open on Thursday, but now decided to just move it back to Friday and open it on Friday. Here's what I'm thinking, quite honestly, what we're going to experience once the new ballpark opens, and whether it's the spring campus or a land swap with Black and Veatch, is the ability to go down there and just hang out all day. You'd rather have your opening day on a Friday, because I've been there to the Battery in Atlanta. It's awesome. It is the greatest. Have you been?
I have.
Okay. Luckily. It's the best game day atmosphere that I've ever seen outside a ballpark anywhere.
Is it better than the atmosphere that was at the Chicago Bears versus the Cleveland Browns game this week? I don't know if you've seen this yet. A guy brought his own bag of spaghetti and ate it in his seat. What's like the weirdest food you ever brought into a game? I mean, literally a Ziploc bag. I just retweeted if you want to look at it on X. Guy sitting in his seat, just sitting down, got a Ziploc bag, beer can goes back in the holder, opens the bag, just shoveling spaghetti.
I brought Chipotle in the VK one time when I was young.
You can do that.
Yeah, you can do that. That's
I saw a
fine.
Guy bring in Taco Bell to the Royals game.
I've seen pizzas out there.
Like a whole pie?
Yeah. So I was like a pizza box. Like a, I don't know, whatever the company is from.
I mean, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. He's some guy from, you know, Chicago eating a hot bowl of spaghetti out of a Ziploc bag. It's a brilliant move.
But I have not heard why this game was moved back a day, but I feel like we're used to that off day after opening day, so now
because
we're not
of weather. That's why it's there.
Yeah, but it's weather, but it's Atlanta and it's March and it's December. No, they haven't said anything yet. I mean, you can't predict the weather tomorrow, let alone what's going to happen at the end of March.
Well, so now we can't skip our fifth starter the first time through without that off day, so we can't carry Nick Lofton for the first week of the season.
I know that's going to suck, but the Atlanta thing, I guarantee they want to use it because it's a Friday. You give everybody the opportunity. You know what? Just take Friday off, come down here and spend all your money down here and hang out at the ballpark all day. Nobody has to worry about going to work on Saturday. So that's what I think, but that's also me, you know, that's also the, you know, the 22-year-old fraternity guy in my brain still thinking about drinking all the time is the reason why we do things in this world. But I think, you know, spending a lot of money around the ballpark after they spend some money in free agency is probably one of the reasons why.
Oh, if you worked at an office in Marietta and opening day was on Friday, that would be an insanely awesome day.
Yeah, it would be. I think it's great. I love Friday day games. I think the new stadium when the Royals do that should have Friday day games as well. Friday day games at Wrigley are awesome. You go to the game, you have a great time. You have go home for dinner. You know, you can go out to dinner. You can still be home for the family on Friday if you need to do that kind of stuff. Like, Friday day games are just the best.
And what sucks too is, like you had mentioned earlier, that the game got moved back to Friday and that it's a night. It's like 7.
Oh, is it a night game too?
It's a night game. Yeah, I didn't know if you'd mentioned that.
Oh, I didn't see that part. That sucks.
Opening day is always at 3.
It's opening day.
Yeah, if you go to Annie Rogers' Twitter handle, I think she said the game will first pitch is like either like 6 or 7 p.m. Yeah, so you got to wait all day for Friday night.
Makes no sense.
I don't know what the issue was. I don't know if they had like weather that they saw in advance or if it's, I'm pretty sure the game starts at 7 p.m. on Friday night.
7:15.
Yeah.
Followed by a post-game fireworks show.
Yeah. and the end of our show.
And I guess so. Yeah, it doesn't give a reason why. I mean, no, it can't be weather at 6 months in advance, 100 days in advance.
I guess I've got to watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia because the Ziploc spaghetti move is a direct reference to the episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh,
it's a Charlie Kelly bit. Okay. Go do something nice for somebody. You never know. It could change their day, their week, their month, their year. It's simply cool to care. Kansas City, stay kind, stay safe, stay groovy. Coming up next, Cody Golden Drew from 10 to 2. We'll talk to you tomorrow with the man, the myth, the legend, Jay Binkley.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.